On March 15th and 16th, the Southern Oregon University Music Recital Hall will feature performances of Verdi's Requiem. Prior to those live performances, there will be a screening of the film, The Defiant Requiem, at the Varsity Theater on March 12th. My two guests this morning will offer more insights about the performances, the film, and how these events look back at World War II Nazi Germany, a blending of Catholic Mass traditions and the Jewish Holocaust. You can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Jaron Jorgensen is director of the Rogue Valley Chorale and joins me in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
And Maestro Murray Sidlin is founder and president of the Defiant Requiem Foundation. He joins us by phone. Welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Nice to hear your voice.
So, Murray, let's start with your documentary screening on March 12th. What is the Defiant Requiem about?
In the prison concentration camp of Terezin, which is in the Czech Republic, at that time it was Czechoslovakia, the Nazis turned that small town into a rather large prison. Ultimately, over the period of time, 3 years or so, just about 3 years, some 50,000 prisoners were brought to Terezin. They were just taken off the street and or sent notes warning them that they will be sent to a prison camp. Most of the people that I've spoken to who were there had no idea where Terezin was. It's a small town, didn't enter into their lives. The people who were brought there were 99% Jews. They were just taken from their homes in Prague, in Brno, and in parts of Poland, parts of Germany. And it became a what we call a concentration camp. And in that camp, some amazing things happened because of the strength of character of the Jewish prisoners, who insisted on somehow maintaining some sort of semblance of livability, some sort of demand that their lives go on. That doesn't sound like a very important statement, but when you have very little to eat and nothing that is nutritious, when there's no medical attention, when there's no protection from the horrid elements, when you're living in fear constantly, when you see death all around you, then the idea of reaching out to the arts and humanities is a statement that is among the best that humans can imply. So our film, which is called Defiant Requiem, Verdi at Terezin. Now, Verdi was a composer of operas, lived in the 19th century, ended in the 19th century. He wrote operas like Rigoletto and Aida and Traviata. And if you know anything about opera at all, you've heard of Verdi and you've heard his music. But the Verdi Requiem, the Requiem Mass, which is a Catholic work, a work steeped in the Catholic liturgy, but it is also a work of great drama and great beauty. And as I'm fond of telling my friends who will listen to me before they run away, having heard this over and over again, the meaning of any great work of art, the meaning of it is never limited to its original intent. So the meaning of the Verdi Requiem need not be as indicated in the Catholic, the Roman Catholic Mass. It could be a work of power, of drama, of hope, of sincere bended knee to God. So the film that we're going to show indicates all of this. It gives a sense of the morality and integrity of the prisoners who demand somehow to be able to continue their lives. Did the Nazis get in their way? Not really. Not really. The Nazis were not too concerned about what the prisoners did as long as it wasn't subversive, as long as it wasn't harmful, as long as it wasn't any sort of outbreak of people demonstrating. Can't have any of that. But did they permit music? Did they permit lectures? Did they permit drama and cabaret and even a jazz band known as the Ghetto Swingers? They permitted it with certain restrictions. All of these people were in this camp, at which it was a camp that was a holding station, because almost all of them were sent out to the more desperate places of Auschwitz and Dachau and Treblinka and the awful places where death was certainty. So that gives you some idea of what this is all about.
Wow. That's an extraordinary story. The connection between the film and the performance is Requiem. Mm-hmm. So, Jaron, tell me about what is a Requiem and tell me about the performance.
Sure. Maestro Sidlin had alluded to this a little bit, but as a liturgical service, the Requiem is actually a Mass for the Dead in Catholic tradition. It dates back centuries and centuries from the onset of Christianity, at least as far as the way we think of the Requiem today stands. And it is a rite of passage for the soul into the here thereafter, right? And it's an important part for Catholicism, a deeply held belief that without this Requiem Mass, the soul simply will not pass on. And so it slowly develops as a service for the dead from the early years of Christianity. It begins to sort of incorporate music and gather musical elements to it as it grows. And then as composers, especially the more capable composers in the Western classical music canon, begin to try their hand at composing music for these requiems, they begin to transfer from a liturgical setting within the context of a church into the concert hall, and they become more and more like concert works rather than actual worship services intended to serve that liturgical purpose. So you've got many, many great requiems written throughout the 17, 18, 1900s that folks would know and love and recognize: Fauré's Requiem, Mozart's Requiem, Cherubini, and Berlioz. And then we get a couple requiems in the 1800s that are viewed more as humanistic requiems. These are requiems like Johannes Brahms' Ein Deutsches Requiem and Verdi's Messa da Requiem, which is a very humanistic take or look at mortality and death and grief, but also reconciliation, forgiveness, all these things that are pretty universal human experiences all the way back to the dawn of humankind. And it is such a gripping, powerful work, about 90 minutes in length, and Verdi being the masterful opera composer that he was, spins this incredible work with careful pacing and drama and passion. He knows exactly how to hold the audience and, quite frankly, all of us musicians up on the stage in the palm of his hands throughout the duration with moments that just will make your heart beat about, feels like it's going to jump out of your chest, and then other moments where it just takes your breath away and you feel like your heart comes to a complete stop. It's a really gripping work.
My guests are Dr. Jaron Jorgensen, director of the Rogue Valley Chorale, and Maestro Mary Sidlin, founder and president of the Defiant Requiem Foundation. So, how did this combination project of live performance and documentary film come about?
Well, we plan our season around or at least a year in advance, and so looking at this year, Verdi's Requiem was on my radar to program just as it originally stood in the 1800s version by Verdi himself. And then it was through an acquaintance. We have the high school choral invitational here at SOU every fall, and we brought in a guest artist from the University of Redlands. Her name is Nicole Andrews, and she's a director of choral studies there. And she sort of turned me on to this version of the Requiem that exists parallel to the original version called the Defiant Requiem. She said, I don't know if you've heard of this work or of Maestro Murray Sidlin's work and this documentary that they created about it. So I started to look into it, and it's incredible, the history and the intersection that the story that Maestro Sidlin's work and the documentary tells and how it intersects with this work, Verdi's Requiem. And so it was unfortunately just a little too late at that point to do the concert version. And Maestro Sidlin can talk a little bit more about that version. But I at least wanted to try and bring the documentary in for a viewing so we could tie it in to take a larger cultural historical look at how music can transcend cultures and religions and boundaries and give us hope even in the darkest of times. If Maestro Sidlin wants to talk at all about the version of the Defiant Requiem that exists as a concert work.
Well, that's a good segue. So, Mary, how did your work on the Defiant Requiem documentary begin, and how did it become a concert?
Well, Mike, before I get into that, I just want to add something on, and that was this. When we performed Defiant Requiem a long time ago, 2012, I guess it was, in Washington here at the Kennedy Center, in the audience was a very distinguished cleric, the Archbishop of New York, Cardinal Timothy Dolan. And there was a reception after the concert, and Cardinal Dolan came, and I went to him, and I said to him, "So, Your Eminence, how do you feel about these Jews in a concentration camp, borrowing your Requiem Mass, as a kind of means of their own soulful nutrition?" And he looked at me, and the eyebrow went up, and he said, "Maestro, you got that wrong." He said, "The Requiem Mass is derived from the Psalms of David, and the prisoner choirs and Terezin merely took back what was originally and rightfully theirs." That was a staggering comment. I had no idea that the Requiem Mass that really had its roots in the Jewish Psalms and the Hebrew Psalms and prayers. Now, having said that, what was your question? I'm sorry.
That's a great background to understanding how the Requiem has been adopted and adapted to both the Christian and the Jewish faith. So it originated out of the Jewish faith, and it has migrated into the Christian faith, and as so many things have. So it seems quite natural. But how did you work on the Defiant Requiem documentary begin?
Well, as with all things that are really extraordinary, and all this was an idea. I don't take credit for it. I stumbled on it. Honestly, that's the honest truth. I stumbled on the story. I was getting ready to move from where I was teaching in Minneapolis. I was at the University of Minnesota, and I had taken a position at the Oregon Symphony under the guise of James DePriest, who was the great music director at that time, happened to be my closest friend, and was going to be my boss as well. And I was excited about moving to Portland, so I was getting the house ready to move. I was taking a walk on a Sunday during the day in the spring, and I passed by in Minneapolis. I passed by a place called Bryn Mawr Books, and out in front was a table, and on the table was a pyramid. You know, the shape of pyramids that can rise from books that the owners of the stores are dying to get rid of. So. And I can't pass up a pie like that, and neither can you. You must stop and look and see that for $3 you can pick up a first edition Shakespeare. You're sure of it. So I look over and I see this pile of books, and there was a, this is no joke now, there was a a normal size book sticking out of right dead center.
Murray, hold on. Yeah. I'm going to ask you to hold us on that cliffhanger. A pyramid of books, and there's a book sticking out. We need to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll finish that. Now, before the break, Murray was telling us about a pyramid of books.
Should I go on, Mike?
Please.
Okay, fine, thanks. So I stumbled on this pyramid of books, and there was this book sticking out, and I decided I was going to give it a whirl, and I pulled a little bit, and then I decided it's now or never, and I, just got it out of the pile, and the pile held, believe it or not. And in my hand, I had a book called Music at Terezin. And I thought, Terezin, isn't that a place where the Nazis had some sort of, it was a show place or something? It was that vague in my mind. I had heard the name, but I couldn't place it or find any significance in my memory about what it was. So I took the book, I opened up the table of contents, and I saw that it was a list of names. So Music at Terezin is the title of the book. I thought the names are those people who had some contribution to make to the musical life at this concentration camp. I opened the book at random toward the center, and it happened to be into a small chapter, 3 pages, entitled Raphael Schechter, S-C-H-A, Schechter, A-E-C-H-T-E-R. And so it said, yes, he was born in Romania, he graduated there, and he went to music school in the town of Brno, also in Czechoslovakia, the former Czechoslovakia, graduated with distinction as a composer, conductor, pianist, opera coach. And then he went back to Prague, got a job with a small opera company. And after a while, the larger companies were taking an interest in him because he seemed to be very gifted, very talented. And he got a job with another one of the opera companies. War breaks out. Then that was the end because the Jews were going to be deported. And he eventually found himself deported from Prague to a train that was taking them someplace and turned out to be Terezin. He gets to Terezin. He's assigned a job, work. He rooms with a younger man who was a bass singer by the name of Edgar Krause. All this is just story in the book. But what was amazing was the last few lines. It said that he gathered a group of 150 voices by a volunteer choir, gathered them up, and he decided he was going to teach them the Verdi Requiem. And he had the only score, the piano vocal score. So he was going to have to do it by rote, which he did ultimately. Now this is something Jared will absolutely understand the significance of that. Imagine all these people. Nobody's got any music, right? Because the one score they had, the conductor now has, and he's going to turn that over to the pianist. So it's a good thing that he has it all done by memory. So one night he would bring the men down, teach them 12 bars. The next night he'd bring the women down to this basement, this sort of rehearsal basement, one light bulb and no air to breathe. And then the third night he'd put the men and the women together to sing the 12 bars that they had all learned in the past few nights. So slowly, slowly with a laborious task of teaching the Verdi Requiem by rote. This is, you know, incredible, absolutely highly significant. And ultimately, this 90-minute piece was given performance, 90 minutes of music. So this was something that Schechter wanted to do. Why? Because he was driven to do it. It's great music. It's powerful music. It's beautiful music. It's dramatic music. And it's spiritual. It really is quite... there was no reason not to do it. Except the Council of Elders, that is a group of Jewish leaders in the camp, were very frightened about this because there were a number of very Orthodox Jewish people in the camp, rabbis and others who were not clerics but just Orthodox, who felt that this was really a Catholic project. It was parading as a concert, but this was going to be a kind of a Catholic project. And so the Council of Elders became quite frightened that this is going to cause outbreaks of demonstrations by people who would not want to be in the presence of something that was enormously Christian, as this was. And so Schechter was called in and read the riot act by the Council of Elders and said, you will stop what you're doing. You will disband this project. And he just said, I'll tell you what, I'll take it to the chorus and they will decide and we will let you know. That night he went to the chorus and he told them that he'd been brought in and that he was told to disband this project, but he was going ahead with it. And then he pointed. Several of them told me this and showed me, demonstrated with their right arms. They pointed, and Schechter said, there's the door. If you do not wish to participate, I will understand, but we are going ahead with it. The vote was taken. They all decided to go ahead with it. No one left. And they eventually gave a couple of performances, which turned into 16 performances altogether.
And ultimately, they performed for their captors.
No, they did not. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say exactly no. The last performance they gave was for the International Red Cross and a group of Nazi brass, high brass. But the original 15 performances were for their own colleagues, their own fellow prisoners. Okay. The Nazis did not come to those performances. They didn't care.
My guests are Dr. Jaron Jorgensen, director of the Rogue Valley Chorale, and Maestro Murray Sidlin, founder and president of the Defiant Requiem Foundation. And so, Jaron, you're now taking this Requiem, Verdi's Requiem, and you're bringing it here to campus. Tell us about it.
Yes. Saturday and Sunday, this upcoming weekend, we'll be doing performances of Verdi's Requiem as it's originally written by Verdi, but with a reduced orchestra. So we'll have forces of about 170 on stage with a new reduction that a publishing company named Carus Verlag has put out not too long ago, and a quartet of soloists that are nationally accomplished. Soprano Christy McLean, who is a voice professor at SOU, mezzo-soprano Robin Rockline from Tennessee, our tenor is Justin Stabell from Minneapolis, and our bass is Ben Sieverding from South Dakota. Them plus the chorus and the orchestra will have over 170 musicians on stage. And I love the tie-in with the Defiant Requiem and specifically the story that tells, because I'm constantly working with my students. So much music from the choral canon comes from some sort of religious tradition. It's pretty hard to decouple the history of choral singing with Christianity, but not just Christianity, even outside of Christianity, other religions. And them, regardless of whatever their life experiences have been, showing them that we can all connect with really great art and find our own connection and on-ramps to these works and meaning in them regardless of whatever our personally held beliefs or prior experiences have been. And I think that's really one of the stories of the Defiant Requiem, is how they found hope, and they found it as an act of resistance, but also incredibly deep, quite frankly, possibly life-saving at times, or giving, lending to life meaning in a work that came from a religion and a tradition outside of their own. And I feel like in the 21st century, that's an incredible moral for us all to take heed from.
Well, it sounds like this would be a deeply powerful and meaningful performance for both the Jewish and Christian communities here in our region.
I would hope so. And just that we can all look at each other and recognize and see the inherent value and shared humanity in each other's customs and cultures. And that at the end of the day, really, when we're all left just in a vacuum, there's not that much that separates us from one another.
Well, give us a little bit about... I'm sorry, go ahead, Murray.
No, it's exactly the way the members of the choir felt, too. I mean, they worked 10, 11 hours of slave labor every day, and yet, at the end of that, then they found that there was something called gruel, or food, parading as food. And after that, they would make their way down to this dark, dank, airless cellar to learn the Verdi Requiem. Can you imagine? Why? Because it's great music, and it's inspiring music, and it doesn't have to be Catholic or any other specific brand of religiosity. If you are moved deeply by the music, then, you know, we all understand that music has a great sense of spirituality that just automatically comes with it.
Absolutely. Jaron, what do you want audiences to take away from this performance?
I hope that for myself, personally, we've been also tying into these performances like in memoriam tribute for folks that have liked or wish to memorialize someone that they've passed, which is at the end of the day in the spirit of a requiem, exactly what it's intended for. And so even though we've lifted it out of a liturgical context and we're doing it in a concert hall, we're still trying to tie into this thing that we all share across humanity since the dawn of mankind, which is that we are, at some point in time, we will all leave this earthly existence, right, and transfer over to whatever your individual beliefs may be after. And so as we are left here during this fleeting time, grappling with our own mortality or grieving the loss of someone else close to us, that we can come together and have this shared experience that will lift us up, that will, yes, make us face some of the ugly sides of losing someone, but also maybe find some hope and some beauty in acceptance and in reconciliation.
So the audience will be uplifted and moved.
Yes, and I like to say, as a conductor who works with a large variety of folks of all different experiences, that for myself personally, I always feel connected to something larger than myself, whatever that may be, when I'm in the presence of great, great music. It always lifts me to some additional realm that I almost forget in my day-to-day existence that is there. But through these experiences, I'm reminded, yes, okay, there is something larger than myself in this little vacuum on this planet that has meaning to it.
And Murray, the same question to you. What do you hope audiences will take away from the documentary on March 12th?
I would like them to sense what the prisoners went through. And in spite of the airless, cold, unbelievably difficult conditions in which they had to exist, that their commitment and dedication to the beauty of life, to the wonder of God, to everything that is inspiring to them was there. And the prisoners, the musicians, the actors, the instrumentalists, whoever, whatever they offered. And by the way, there were some 2,500 lectures given by 530 prisoners on every conceivable subject, 300 lectures on literature alone.
It sounds like we could go on and on, but unfortunately we're out of time, guys. I really appreciate you both for joining me today.